It is a great pleasure to welcome to Best Ideas 2022 returning MOI Global instructor Will Thompson, managing partner at Massive Capital, a value-oriented investment partnership focused on global opportunities in energy, basic materials, and industrials. Massive invests principally in businesses with long-lived assets that generate predictable cash flows and require not only capital allocation acumen for management, but also a keen focus on operational excellence. The investment practice is primarily concerned with the nature of risk and value as it relates to protecting, enhancing, and deploying the irreplaceable capital of Massive's investors into a concentrated portfolio of economically productive assets. And I have known Will and his partner Chip to be two of the most savvy and most well-informed investors in this area. You guys do tremendously deep research, and so I'm always excited to get your views and ideas, and I know that the MOI Global community has benefited tremendously from them. So without further ado, Will, I'll turn it to you for today's conversation and the presentation, and I'll be back for the Q&A afterwards. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thanks, John. I, as always, appreciate the introduction and the kind words. I know that MOI has been a great community for us in terms of just learning. So very rarely do you find a group of as informed investors who you can learn as much from as the group you've put together. So we are always happy to present. And I was sort of looking at it earlier this morning, and I ended up throwing a page in at the end of the presentation. This will be our seventh presentation for MOI in some way, shape, or form. I'm sure some people have done more, but it's been a long and good relationship. So with that in mind, we present for your consideration today, Equinox Gold. Equinox Gold is a mid-tier Americas-focused gold miner that is currently valued at about half of their net asset value of the future discounted cash flows from their asset base. They are fully funded in terms of a growth pipeline that will double their production by about 2025. That makes Equinox, by our estimation, the fastest growing gold miner over that period of time on the basis of production. They have a top-tier management team that has built in excess of 50 mines, which for a single management team, that's quite impressive. Mines, you know, oftentimes mining professionals only build one or two in their lifetime. And then they have a founder and chairman of the board in the form of Ross Beaty, who is not only one of the more successful serial entrepreneurs in the mining industry, but also built Pan American Silver, which is the largest publicly traded independent silver miner in the world. Annual production catalysts every year between now and 2025. So there's going to be steady news flow and steady operational updates every year. So plenty of reasons for the market to pay attention. The stock trades on both the NYSE under the ticker symbol EQX and on TSX, also under the ticker symbol EQX. It benefits from being a fast-growing mining firm that Ross Beaty has sort of focused on scaling up quickly and productively, with the idea being that in the gold space in particular, you need to be in the GLD and the various other ETFs, I guess not the GLD, but the various other ETFs that hold gold assets, as most people these days are not going to be buying independent miners. So the idea behind EQX was to build a gold miner that scales up to a major as quickly as possible and achieves institutional quality as quickly as possible. I would say personally, thus far, they've managed to accomplish that. If you look here on this chart, this is the quarterly gold production chart dating back from their roughly the time they first started producing gold in the first quarter of 2019. They produced 25,000 ounces, and now, you know, a couple of years later, they're up to 140,000 ounces a quarter. So they have quite quickly not only pulled past producing mines off the trash heap and bought them at sometimes some very steep or bankrupt-like prices and refurbished them. But they've also built some greenfield assets and engaged in some mergers and acquisitions at market prices that are quite favorable. So once again, North American focused, has advanced from a single rundown asset in California. And yes, they still mine gold in California. I went out and saw the mine myself, and is now advancing to a multi-asset producer with likely more than 1.2 million ounces of production by 2025. Very strong balance sheet, $400 million revolver, cash flow from seven operating mines, and very supportive long-term shareholder base. Currently, the seven operating mines the firm has, they have two assets in California, both of which are in production, one of which will be undergoing a brownfield expansion over the next couple of years to take it from a very small 20 to 30,000 ounce a year producer to in excess of 200,000 ounces. They also have two Mexican assets, one of which they just sold for $100 million in cash, as well as a net smelter royalty and some stock in the company that they sold it to. And I'll actually come back to that story in a second because it demonstrates some of what this management team is doing so well. The other asset they have in California or in Mexico, is the Los Filos asset, which is not only a very strong gold producer, but a strong silver producer, and also currently undergoing a brownfield expansion. And then they have three assets in Brazil, one of which is undergoing a brownfield expansion, and one asset that's currently in development down there. In terms of their growth profile, as I said earlier, they appear to us to be the fastest growing gold miner between now and 2025 based on known production that's coming back online. So that is, it's an estimate on our part. Obviously, we don't know every single mine that's going to come online between now and 2025, but it's relatively straightforward to count up what will be coming online. Equinox has also gone ahead and done that for what they consider to be their peer group. And I'll touch on that analysis they did in a moment. But so they have two new mines that are coming online that are not currently in production. That's the Santa Luis mine and the Greenstone mine. The Santa Luis mine is past producing mine that they're bringing back into production. They acquired it as part of an acquisition a couple of years ago. So it is a very quick and relatively cheap mine to bring back online. $100 million in CapEx, all the infrastructure was in place. And they expect to average about 100,000, 95 to 100,000 a year, ounces a year in production over a 10-year mine life. Construction is 70% complete, and turning on the Santa Luz mine is this year's sort of big catalyst for the company. The Greenstone mine was just purchased as part of an acquisition last year at the beginning of the year. They own 60% of that asset. It is likely to be one of the larger pure play gold mines in Canada when it is up and running in 2024. It'll produce 360,000 ounces a year at a very low $700 per ounce all-in sustaining cost. The three assets that the firm has that they are expanding in brownfield development are the one California asset I mentioned, And then the Mexican asset and the asset in Brazil. And so all three of those are going to provide additional incremental production in 2023, 2025, and 2026, I think. But I think one of the reasons this is, you know, one of the more interesting opportunities in the mining space currently, and for those of you who have followed us for a while, will sort of, this will sound familiar. We think within mining, it is critical that your management team knows how to create value from the portfolio of assets that a firm inevitably owns, some of which will be mines and some of which will not be. Differentiating between the two, constantly refreshing that portfolio is critical. It is very much, you know, sort of like being a portfolio manager of an equity portfolio. You know, some things can be held for a long time, some things should not be held for a long time. And so the Equinox management team has proven themselves in very short order, dating back to 2018, to be quite proficient at sort of refreshing their portfolio. And so that starts with the very first mine that they bought, which is this Mesquite mine in California. Now, I've gone out to this mine and it is just in the middle of nowhere in California, and it had been shut down several years ago. They purchased it for $158 million, and as of the beginning of last year, they had extracted $139 million in free cash flow from it. At this point, I expect that the free cash flow from the asset is in excess of the $158 million that they had paid for it. In addition, it's produced that cash flow was produced by this 316,000 ounces. That was, at the time of the acquisition, the full expected life of the asset. They have since really gotten to know the geology, and they've added 670,000 ounces of gold production for the out years, the next couple of years, to the asset's life. So for $158 million, they really, you know, they've basically tripled the production potential that they've had thus far, and already extracted in the terms of free cash flow, basically the value that they paid for it. At the same time that they bought the Mesquite mine, the management team also acquired the Aurizona mine, which had long been a bit of a troubled asset because it is, it's in Brazil. The previous owners had some challenges. Where it is quite rainy, which creates its own challenges for mining. They've got the asset relatively cheap. I don't remember off the top of my head what the cost was, but they built the asset then for $160 million. And as a note here, they've had about $175 million in free cash flow off of that asset. In addition to, just like in the case of Mesquite, discovering significant volume of additional ounces as they continue to explore and understand that geology. Okay. As part of the build out of this company, there have been two acquisitions. There have been several acquisitions, but in those acquisitions, the firm also acquired a whole bunch of copper assets. And this is the type of thing we really like to see from mining company management teams, going through that portfolio of land packages that they all have, which can be quite large, quite dramatic, and seeing what might be good to sell or what might be good to spin out at the current time, taking advantage of the market. They had a number of copper assets in South America. It's been a good time for copper. So they spun out those copper assets into another entity called Solaris Resources. Since the spin out, Solaris has had some tremendous success in drilling. And as a result, there's been appreciation of $186 million in the percentage of Solaris Resources that Equinox still owns. So they've created value both, you know, via smart purchases, via excellent execution and operations in the case of Aurizona, and via spinning out and sort of right-sizing that portfolio of assets. The latest acquisition was Premier Gold. Premier Gold acquisition occurred at the beginning of last year. And the idea behind the Premier Gold acquisition was that they would get the 60% of the well, 50% of the Greenstone mine. And then they bought a further 10% from someone else. So the idea behind the acquisition of Premier was we want the Greenstone mine. That was the asset that they were interested in. In addition, the land packages that Premier owned and a old mine that they owned came along with it. Those assets have been spun out since the acquisition, with the spin out of i80 Gold occurring in shares that are now worth about $95 million. So they probably couldn't sell them all without tanking the stock, but you know, those assets were thrown in basically, and they've managed to create at the very least balance sheet value in the present. They just sold, as I noted, the Mercedes mine, which was had a very short life, a bit of just sort of a mixed asset that may or may not have a future based on future drill results. And they sold that for $100 million. So they've, you know, sort of recouped almost half the cost, if you will, in some ways. Admittedly, the i80 is in the form of shares, but they've recouped quite a bit of the cost of that acquisition that occurred last year. So once again, smart management team turning over the portfolio, reinvesting in the portfolio, and right-sizing it just on a continuous basis to make it sort of the best it can be for this company. Can't talk about the management team of Equinox without talking about Ross Beaty. Ross Beaty is the single largest shareholder, owns about 9% of the company. He's also a co-founder. He has had a just spectacular track record over his career in the mining industry, primarily through the Lumina group of companies, which he's related to, and via Pan American Silver. The Lumina group of companies, which you can see all the various different companies that have been part of that group over the years. They've raised $275 million in equity across all those entities and returned to shareholders roughly $1.6 billion. And that's since the early 2000s. So they've been just spectacular value creators for shareholders. We currently are invested in Lumina Gold Corp, which owns a highly prospective gold asset in Ecuador currently. In addition, of course, he founded Pan American Silver. And as you can see in the chart of Pan American Silver's market cap over the last 5 years, they've had tremendous success, compounding the value of that company by about 23% per annum versus silver, which is only compounded around 10%. So, that sort of leverage bet on the underlying commodity would be well achieved by having invested in Pan American Silver a couple of years ago. And a lot of that has to do with Ross Beaty at the top, managing significant political risks in Mexico, a very diverse Americas portfolio of silver assets, and a very tricky sort of silver commodity, if you will, because silver can be just a very tricky commodity to manage. So once again, Equinox has a top-tier management team, one of the best in the mining industry, and in particular in the gold industry. The only comparable team, in my opinion, would be the team that Mark Bristow has put together at Barrick Gold, which is also another spectacular team. We think there's sort of significant potential for a revaluation here on a couple of different sort of bases. So first of all, as you can see from the chart on the left, the price to net asset value, which is oftentimes how markets value gold miners, Equinox trades at 0.52x or roughly 0.52x. I don't remember the exact date on this. Whereas most intermediate producers who are comparable, which is to say people who produce more than 500,000 ounces a year, give or take, they tend to trade at 0.8. And senior producers, your Barrick Gold, et cetera, producers who produce in excess of 1,000,000 ounces a year, tend to trade at 1.2x. The 0.52x is sort of a very common trading multiple for pre-production, but well-advanced companies. And so Equinox, in part because they have so much going on, in our opinion, and thus the financials can be a little confusing, trades more like a junior than a mid-tier that it clearly is. And to be perfectly frank, more like a highly prospective junior that is pre-development or pre-production, despite the fact that they have seven producing months. As you can see on the right, this is the annual production growth expected between now and 2025. This will take the firm to about 1.2 million ounces, or the level that they might be considered a senior producer, depending on who you ask. And as you can see, that these additional ounces, you get additional ounces every single year between now and 2025. So there's quite a bit of growth in addition to the value that we think is available. This is some analysis that the Equinox team did themselves, sort of looking at some of the variables on the previous page. As you can see, they calculate a PNAV of 0.56x, but that puts them quite low down the list. Now, of these comparables, they produce more gold at the moment than at least half of them, despite the fact that they traded at a discount. Now they're all in sustaining cost, and production is currently a little higher than some of these guys, but that has to do with the fact that they have so much growth and are reinvesting into their portfolio of assets so aggressively. As you can see, in 2024, they have estimated production of about 1.1 million, which is more than everyone on this list, save for two names. And that growth between now and 2024 tops that list. In addition, in terms of gold, we're always thinking about store of value. So, of course, we want a lot of reserves for them to continue to build out their asset and continue to mine. And as you can see, in comparison to these other mid-tier miners, they have a strong reserve base. Going back to my comment about all-in sustaining costs, as you can see, the all-in sustaining cost last year was through the roof and has risen quite aggressively over the last couple of years. And that is completely to do with the fact that they've been investing so heavily in their firm and in the assets, in the growth assets. But in the out years, based on our analysis, that all-in sustaining cost is going to drop quite dramatically, as most of the assets that they're building look to have all-in sustaining costs between about $700 and $900 per ounce. So within a number of gold price environments, it's quite a high free cash flow potential. Now, when we think about how to go about valuing a firm like this, we think about a couple of different scenarios. And in the case of Equinox, we've approached it by both valuing it on a DCF basis with a calculated WACC, as a lot of market participants tend to do, and on a DCF basis with a higher discount rate of around 10%, as well as some low case scenarios where things go wrong. Our high case scenario, we use spot gold from a couple of weeks ago and 6% WACC that we calculated. We think that there's a reasonably high probability that scenario is the way the market views the firm once they get over a couple of initial humps with bringing on new assets. The base scenario, again, lower gold price, but we didn't pick any gold prices lower than about 1,500, in part because we don't see the market as particularly likely to value gold assets at prices below that in the present. Again, a 6% WACC. And then the two low scenarios, with low scenario two being slightly different than the rest, in that we penciled in sort of underperformance at one of the larger assets, Los Filos, due to political risk, which in the case of that asset, which is in Mexico, the firm has experienced from time to time. Even in that low case scenario, we get a price in excess of the current market price. So we're quite optimistic that there's significant value here for investors. We add up all those scenarios and those probability weightings. Those probability weightings are admittedly subjective, but they come together to produce this subjective sort of probability weighted value of $18, which we think is quite a reasonable target for Equinox. So with that, I'm open for questions, and sort of flip over to this last page. These are the last couple of MOI conference presentations we've given, along with the total return if you had invested on the first of the month of the time we gave the presentation and held to now. Just sort of thought it was kind of interesting and hadn't looked at it. So if anyone has any questions on any of the previous presentations we've given, I'm happy to talk about those as well.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Will. Just a reminder to everyone listening, if you have a question, click the Q&A icon in Zoom and you can write it in. Will, I'm wondering where you would place the company on a cost curve of mid-tier producers, let's say, especially as you look a few years out?
Yeah, so looking a few years out, when you get into this sort of 24, 26 period, that sub $800 all-in sustaining cost is going to make them a top quartile producer. Now, there are some mines in a couple of places where and some mining firms where they've got assets that have significant byproducts, so not only gold, but silver and copper and other things that can drive all-in sustaining costs even lower. But at sub 800, you're going to be about as competitive as it's gonna as you're going to get typically.
Have they talked about experiencing any inflationary pressures in terms of their labor costs or other costs of running the mines?
Yeah, so definitely in regards to the two California assets, they have definitely experienced not only labor cost inflation, but also inflation with the inputs to the process, which, you know, tires, fuel, chemicals, etc. In regards to the Mexican asset, they've suffered most from energy cost inflation. Mexico's got a couple of energy issues right now with the political situation. In terms of the Brazilian assets, I think the inflation has been more subdued, but they've experienced some there as well. But they do benefit from, in the case of both Brazil and Mexico, their costs are all in local currencies and their revenue is all in dollars. And so that that combination sort of helps out a little bit.
What role do you think M&A will play in growing their portfolio?
Yeah, I think that, so in our conversations with the management team, they say they're done for the moment. They say they've got enough on their plate, which I would tend to agree with, you know, for assets that are in some stage of construction, if you will, currently. That's a lot for that team. I think there's more than enough for them to get on with. Once they get to that million ounces, 2024, 2025 period, there's certainly a possibility. What I would say is that some of the opportunities that they took advantage of in the 2018, 2019 period, I'm not sure at these gold prices you're going to see those opportunities again. It was just a good time to be buying certain types of gold assets. And of course, the two California assets that they bought with some permitting risk, if you will. But according to them, operating in California has been a real pleasure, not particularly challenging, which I found a little surprising. And so those assets were sold at a discount, not only because of the gold price, but also because of the geography. But it turned out not to be as much of a risk. I suspect that another acquisition will occur in the post-2025 period. I suspect it would be a Canadian asset. That seems like the jurisdiction they'd like to expand in, just to create more balance in the portfolio. But who knows if they'll get the opportunity. They're quite insistent on the transactions occurring mostly at the market. And you've got to find the right partner who's willing to accept an at-the-market transaction.
Speaking of jurisdictions, could you just elaborate a little bit on how the portfolio breaks down by jurisdiction, whatever criteria you want to use for breaking it down, and kind of talking about friendliness and so forth?
So the Greenstone asset, which is not on this map, but I think you guys can see my icon. It's like right here, if you will, is a Canadian asset. So that'll be turned on around 2025, 2024. Quebec, if I remember correctly. So a great jurisdiction for mining. There's not going to be any problems. There's tons of infrastructure, great relationships with First Nation communities. They've spent a lot of time and effort developing those relationships. So I think that's, you know, it's going to be a great asset. The U.S. assets, California, seems to be working out okay. The Brazilian assets, I think the political risk there, you know, I think it's a mixed bag. It probably is similar to Mexico in that the political risk is at the local level. So it's all about maintaining strong relationships with the communities around you. Brazil, you benefit from the fact that where the mines are, there don't tend to be a lot of communities around you. You're more sort of in the jungle, if you will. So I don't view the political risk as particularly bad, although one never knows what might come up with a local sort of indigenous community. Mexico is the area I would say is perhaps the most risky. Mexico is just a very tough jurisdiction to work in. You have not only security risk, but you have, you know, sort of pernicious political involvement and high levels of corruption at both the local and the federal level. Now, for the Mexican assets, I think they rely quite heavily on Ross Beaty and his relationships there. Mexico, of course, is a huge silver mining country. So he has many, many years of experience and deep relationships with the government, which are sort of essential. Los Filos has had some issues this year with local communities blocking road access to the mine that has caused it to have to be shut down. That has occurred from time to time at that asset. And they just continue to work through the political risk issues. And, you know, it creates a bit of stop and start sometimes. And last year was definitely one of those years where it was stop and start. But at least for the near term, they've resolved those issues. And I would expect, again, for the near term, things to run smoothly before another political risk issue of a similar nature crops up. And, you know, they'll need to shut it down for a couple of weeks and deal with the local communities. So from a production perspective, it's relatively, especially once the Canadian asset is up and running, it'll be a pretty balanced portfolio in terms of production from, in terms of Canada, US, Mexico, Brazil. It'll be pretty evenly balanced across those.
A viewer asks, what in your opinion is the reason for the undervaluation? Why does the opportunity exist?
Yeah, that is a great question, and one we've talked with their management team about multiple times. So it definitely got a really strong pop at the beginning of the beginning of 2021, it popped quite strongly and then sold off quite badly. My opinion is that all of the sort of shuffling around in the portfolio, which I think is long-term value accretive, and the heavy, heavy investment cycle that they're currently in the midst of, has sort of scared some people off. In addition, in conversations with management teams this year, they said that the political risk at Los Filos has come up on a regular basis, and that on the sell side, there are analysts who have chosen to literally just write the mine off altogether. Why they would have chosen to do that, I don't understand, nor does the management team understand, nor could they get an explanation for that. So I think there's just a couple of variables sort of like that that combine to it having really not done much over the last sort of year and a half.
And a broad question on your previous MOI global ideas, to what extent are those theses still valid?
Yeah. So Lucara Diamonds, we still own. We're not down 69% in it. We bought it cheaper than that. Remember, the dates above are the first of the month of September 2017 is when that total return number is calculated from. So we still like it. I think at the time when I do my sort of post-mortem, if you will, and think about what we did wrong with Lucara, I would say we made a pretty classic error of taking the commodity cycle for diamonds and extrapolating out what was a very robust, strong market into the future, and didn't take into account what would be a strong sell-off in the diamond market that occurred between 2017 and say last year. So we made a pretty grievous error, if you will, in our analysis in that regard. But the asset is still quite unique, and the diamond market cycle has turned. So we remain optimistic and positive about it. GraphTech, that thesis didn't play out. For those who don't remember, GraphTech was an electric arc furnace producer, largely owned by Brookfield Asset Management. It had signed some just wonderful long-term contracts, was free cash flowing like nobody's business, strong dividend potential, but it just never all came together, and the market sort of never appreciated what that free cash flow was going to look like. And then they failed to re-sign a lot of those long-term contracts, and it just sort of fell apart. So that thesis is no longer intact, in my opinion. Hawpar, we're out of. So I can't really speak to whether the thesis would still be intact. We didn't think it was intact anymore. Part of the problem with Hawpar was while there is still tremendous value there, and we did not sell at the price we thought it was worth, management team owns enough of it and is just uninterested, it seems, in doing anything that might prompt the market to take a second look at it. It's lightly traded on the Singapore exchange, mostly owned by one family. There's just not a lot. They kind of use it as a piggy bank, not in an egregious way, but just doesn't seem like anyone's going to pay any attention to it. So there doesn't seem to be any marginal buyers, if you will. Kazatomprom, we got out of. We did a little bit better than that 186% gain. Kazatomprom is a prime example of sort of what we look for in commodity firms. A lot of people will start their commodity sort of investment with a thesis about the commodity itself. As you'll note from this presentation, I almost didn't talk about the gold price at all. We recognize and are not naive enough to assume that the commodity price doesn't play a role, but it doesn't need to be the primary variable in a commodity producer. In the case of Kazatomprom, we bought at the IPO, it was trading at around $13 or so per share, but the free cash flow from the assets that were all up and running, and all of the uranium had been sold, pre-sold, or was being sold, et cetera, weren't having a problem unloading it all, just had it worth significantly more. It was just trading at a steep, steep discount. Once it hit what we considered to be its intrinsic value, and the only variable left was further uranium price appreciation, we sold again, because we don't want to hold anything just because we have an expectation about the commodity price. Commodity price thesis is not sufficient for holding a commodity producer, in our opinion. Africa Oil, we do still own. We think it's got a little bit further to go. And RWE, we still own. We think it's got something like 30% still to go.
Will, how low in market cap would you go to when you're looking at potential investments?
We tend not to go below around 200 to 250 million.
Interesting. And remind us, by the way, anyone listening, Will and Chip put out some great research that's also available on the Massive Capital website. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit to that, Will, but I think it's a great, and also the email list that you guys have, some terrific resources there. And to that point, you have talked about some areas of the commodity sector, broadly defined, that you find especially attractive. Can you just remind us of those, please?
Yeah, well, there definitely have been some in the past. Right now, everything feels a little pricey and a little uneasy. Our largest position is Lithium Americas right now. We think the lithium market it remains quite interesting, quite constrained, both on a capital side of things and on a production side of things. There isn't the money to bring on the mines that are necessary to address some of the ramp up in EVs and batteries that are predicted. And to be perfectly frank, you really don't need to come anywhere close to some of the predictions you hear in order for the shortages to start proliferating. Tin was one of our big winners last year. We were invested in a company called Alphamin, which owns a tin mine in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Tin is the glue, if you will, that holds all of our electronics together. It's a niche metal. Nobody has invented Alphamin. Their mine is like the first new tin mine in 25 years or something like that. It also is the highest grade tin mine in the world. That's sort of the type of thing we like to look for, if you will. Something that's a little sleepier, that people aren't really paying as much attention to. Admittedly, lithium runs completely counter to that. But tin is interesting. Copper and nickel are both interesting, but at the moment quite tricky, especially copper. Copper is very tricky right now. Nickel might be hitting new highs at the moment. I'd have to go back and double check. But again, nickel is quite a challenging metal to mine, and quite hard to find a pure play. In terms of non-metals, we still think natural gas and LNG in particular, we don't necessarily think natural gas has got a long way to go in terms of its price appreciation from here. I'd be surprised if it did. But the forward outlook for something like natural gas, especially if the European Union agrees to include it as a transition fuel in their green classification system for investments, it's quite a robust future in our opinion. There's just very few ways to not only achieve some level of decarbonization, admittedly not as clean as renewables, but definitely cleaner than coal, and address immediate energy needs. That's the real challenge right now from an energy perspective. It's the ramping down of thermal assets without the consummate or comparable ramping up of renewable assets. And the only thing that really fits the bill nicely is something like natural gas, where, you know, you don't want to build a nuclear power plant, fine. You don't want to build a coal plant, fine. We understand that. But what's got a 10-year life that we can expect to, you know, get a return on capital on, and can be built very quickly and can address immediate energy needs, whether that be in emerging markets or developed markets, has a small land footprint, et cetera. And that's a natural gas combined cycle turbine. So, you know, in terms of filling gaps, it's just a fantastic fuel.
Someone listening apparently has a thesis on GravTech, which you just talked about. I'll read it quickly to you. Don't you think that with graphite prices trending up, GravTech will be able to strike additional deals in the near future, maybe a bit shorter in duration, but still valuable? They're also paying down debt and are now virtually free from Brookfield.
Well, being free from Brookfield is definitely a positive. We also invested in a company called Tiki Offshore at one point, and Brookfield took them under at a price below the market price, which was quite fascinating. So our relationship with Brookfield is quite poor. Not that they know who we are, but I mean, I think that's an interesting idea. You know, you might be able to catch the cycle right here and invest in it. We definitely had the cycle wrong, although we had the cash flow potential of the firm over the next couple of years and the discount or the dividend potential right. And the market just didn't seem to care. It was primarily interested in what was coming after the next couple of years. Certainly a possibility. We definitely think that EAF, electric arc furnaces in this case, not the stock GravTech, but EAF electric arc furnaces are, you know, ramping up globally. China wants to convert from their sort of 80% of steel produced via blast furnaces in the present to mostly EAF. The United States continues to grow from our current about 60% EAF. So there's definitely plenty of demand for graphite electrodes. They remain a small part of the cost of operations. So there's certainly ability to ramp prices up a little bit. It might be worth a second look. We tend not to take second looks at things after we get burned in them, just because we aren't confident. We can't bring some emotional baggage to our analysis, but might be worth a second look.
Okay, terrific. Well, we will leave it there. I want to thank everyone listening and participating, and I want to thank you, Will, very much for taking the time to be with us again this year.
Well, I want to thank you again for having me, John. And as you noted, you know, please feel free to either email us. Our email addresses are here. Visit our website. Plenty of research there. And in fact, we did a write-up on Equinox, I think about a month ago. So that's on our website also.
Okay, terrific. Best wishes to all. Goodbye for now.
Thank you.